Hello, everyone. This is Robert Yee, Editor-in-Chief of the Vanderbilt Historical Review.
And Nayla Mangum, Editor of the Vanderbilt Political Review.
Dylan Rosenfield, Managing Editor of Vanderbilt Historical Review.
Today we are here for the first part in our series, Presidential Elections, Past and Present. We are here with Jefferson Cowie, the James G. Stellman Professor of History. Dr. Cowie is a social and political historian whose research focuses on how class and inequality shape American politics. Dr. Cowie, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So our first question is, how do previous elections compare to this one in terms of their controversy?
This one ranks pretty high in terms of controversy. It's hard to imagine a contemporary, you know, in the 20th century election that actually even comes close. And I think there's been some primaries that were as contentious and interesting, but not actually the national race. It's been this wild.
In general, how has public opinion changed about politics over time?
Well, I'm not necessarily an expert on polling. You should ask Professor Igo about that. That's her area of expertise. But this, I think that there's a suspicion about all things now, experts, information, data, that makes exacerbates what the historian Richard Hofstadter called the paranoid style in American politics. And now it's hard to stake a claim about almost anything. Without it being subjected to, whether it's a poll or a fact, without it being scrutinized from 1,000 different directions, and for the most part, inaccurately.
So going off of that, what do you think the role of social media has played in this election so far?
It's a good question. It's hard not to jump to Twitter at 3 in the morning with that question. Social media tends to heighten the highs and lower the lows. It tends to sort of exacerbate whatever the existing issue is in a variety of ways, whether it's to make people more fearful, more afraid, more angry, or more dejected and more disenchanted, more alienated. It's a fundamental sea change from the daily news cycle. You know, now we're going by seconds, news cycles of seconds. It's a completely different world. And I honestly think there's a sweet spot in the middle somewhere in which the world of ideas actually matters. I'm not a Luddite with regard to social media, but I do think that it's gotten a little out of hand.
Definitely. And with this change in social media and public opinion, what do you think future elections will look like?
That's a good question. I mean, what's really been interesting about this one is that the rules are off, I think. If you had asked the entire American Political Science Association, the American Historical Association, American Sociological Association, and you polled everybody 18 months ago, nobody would have predicted either the success of Bernie Sanders or the success of Donald Trump. And I think that's really refreshing and exciting in the sense that it means there are new models, new ideas, new modes of leadership that can emerge. I don't like the way some of it's happened, but I do think it puts the lie to a number of so-called experts who claim that, you know, here are the three steps you need to do, and here's how to behave, and here's how to hit the message. People are actually craving some leadership. Whether they're getting it or not, I think, is another question. But I think what you really see is a grassroots desire for somebody to rattle the system as it stands.
So how does our system compare to those of other countries? Would you say that this is broken?
I'd say it's highly dysfunctional between the money in politics and the emptiness of a lot of the ideas in politics. But I think what you see, I mean, if you look at Brexit as the most obvious analogy, you see tremendous concern for kind of almost nativist nationalist sensibilities, a sense of almost betrayal about how the global system has have served people. And when we live in a world in which, you know, I think a lot of Trump's supporters, for instance, or the Brexit supporters, feel left behind in the global order, and they're grounding themselves in a sort of ethno-nationalist, religious fundamentalist, whatever it's going to be, perspective to try and give themselves some grounding gives himself some perspective in this kind of global swirl of information and capital and migrations and things like this. And I think that's going to be a problem worldwide. So I think we have a double whammy of too much money in politics, not enough substance, plus a global phenomenon in which this sort of local identity in a global framework is going to continue to be a big problem.
This is a bit of an aside, but do you have a favorite presidential candidate in history?
Oh, favorite presidential candidate in history? Wow, that's an interesting question. I mean, because my favorite president, for the reasons that nobody should have a favorite president, is Richard Nixon. Because I think as a candidate in 68 and 72, he was incredible. But that's not because I believed in him. That's because he embodies all the eccentricities and strain and anxieties of the American political id. You know, so I like him as a character, right? As somebody who embodies the insanity of America. In terms of people, I'm pretty much a New Deal Democrat, so it's hard not to like Roosevelt. But what's interesting about Roosevelt is that he didn't seem what he became is not what he seemed like at the time. Right. He ran as this mild-mannered, jovial guy that everybody liked and then changed the whole system. So, that, you know, that's interesting. I like Jefferson. I'm actually a fan of Lyndon Johnson's in a funny way, too, because, you know, there was a guy who came from a rough background and really understood the nature of poverty and racial discrimination while simultaneously, you know, being a crude, rude, you know, verbally racist person, yet delivered the Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act, you know, Medicare and all the rest. So his 64 landslide, I think, is really interesting. So I'm all over the map on that question. There's a lot to talk about.
Both parties have seen division in their base. What is the future of the two dominant parties? Is it conceivable that we see one or the other fall?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the possibility of the Republican Party falling apart. I think the two-party system is fairly resilient. We've had it since the 1850s. But I do think that the core message of both parties is in trouble. So I think, for instance, where the Republican Party is today is analogous to, say, where the Democrats were in 72, in which, you know, an outsider, George McGovern, comes in because the party really can't come up with a message, can't come up with a unifying theme. It's split between, you know, right-wing populism like George Wallace, centrist liberalism like Hubert Humphrey, and then the left, George McGovern. And McGovern's able to sneak in as part of a party losing its message. That doesn't mean the party fell apart. It means the party was fundamentally transformed. And McGovern, for instance, became the metaphor for what we don't want to ever see again. I mean, I don't agree with that, but that was within the Democratic leadership, that was kind of, and that's where Bill Clinton comes out of, is sort of the anti-McGovern. So I don't see the party as institution falling apart, but I do see a lot of soul searching, a lot of rejiggering, a lot of reconsideration of where people are and where they think the party should be going. And I might also add, it takes a generation to rebuild a party. So it'll still be the Republicans, it'll still be the Democrats, but they'll probably be very different.
We understand that you studied the voting bloc of the white working class very much. Why do you think that fringe candidates like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump were able to gain such a broad base of support in this particular election?
Well, I think it's interesting. Bernie didn't get as much support among white working class as we might have expected. You know, he got a lot of support from